What I would like to encourage you to do this morning is to really just immerse yourself in this experience. We really want to celebrate the birth of our Lord. We want to try to connect our lives to the lives of everyone who knew Him in maybe a way that we haven't thought of before. And so we're really going to work at just making connections this morning. And seeing the scriptures, seeing the story of our faith in a way that really just locks it in to our lives every moment and every day. So this morning, please, just, you can keep your eyes closed if you want to. You can look around and see what's going on. But through it all, just try to really immerse yourself in what's going on. We're talking about first century happenings. Put yourself in that place visually in your mind and see what you see and see what the Lord tells you.
And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were sorrowful afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us go now, even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all that they had heard wondered at those things which were told by them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart.
And so the story begins. It's been called the greatest story ever told, and yet it begins in the unlikeliest of places, with an infant in the unsure hands of a poor rural couple swept up in the movement of an empire. It is a story that we know very well. We know it so well that all its pieces and parts and characters and settings seem to be etched in our minds and hearts at birth. It's as if 2,000 years of telling and retelling and writing and reenactments from the greatest stages and actors of an age to children's and bedsheets have created a collective knowing about this little family, this holy family being moved about by God in Rome, and about this God who chose to live among us, to love among us, as one of us. And so the story begins. And in its unfolding, we nod and smile at the familiar images, but there is a danger here of missing the point. Because far too often, we can know something so well that we don't know it at all. That we can become so familiar with something that we cease to really consider it anymore, like music on an elevator. That this story that we seem to have known beyond memory remains just that, a story we've heard somewhere before. When a story is just a story, it's safe. When a story is just a story, it can be held at arm's length and studied, believed or not believed, treasured, and even loved. But at arm's length, it's still just a story. A beautiful story that stirs us and fills us with breathless intent, but is quickly packed away with nativity scenes and strings of lights. At arm's length, a story can be brought out and displayed once a year and never allowed to touch the places that really matter. What is it about this story that we are meant to understand so deeply that it actually changes our lives? That the lives of our families begin to mirror the life of this holy family? Why has this story been carefully passed on to us from generation to generation, through billions of minds and hearts, from antiquity to postmodernity, from east to west, from Hebrew to Greek to Roman to European to the New World? It must be much more than just a story that is being transmitted here. And the story itself is so short. The precious few lines in Matthew and Luke that tell us all we know of Jesus' birth, infancy and childhood give only the broadest details, the barest outline. So much more is not said than said and remains hidden between the lines. And in that vacuum, all those precious missing human details, we sometimes imagine that Miriam and Joseph, that's Aramaic for Mary and Joseph, were somehow different than us. That perhaps they were so infused with God's Spirit that life was lived differently at their altitude. That they always spoke in proper King James Aramaic and never fought or were irritated or afraid, never felt guilt or regret. We can imagine all sorts of ways that Yeshua's, Jesus' family was different than our own. But as soon as we do that, as soon as we see them other than us, we remove ourselves from this greatest story ever told. And that was never Yeshua's intent. He meant for us not to merely read his story, but to enter into it, to participate in every detail, and to experience what his family and his friends experienced of his life and love. In a very real way, if we can't become Miriam and Yosef, see God with us in the faces of our own children, as they did in the face of theirs, then we've missed the point. This morning, as we celebrate the birth of Yeshua into our lives, we want to share with you little slices of life, verbal snapshots taken by mothers and fathers all across the country of their experiences, their feelings, and their awareness of God in the presence of their own children. As you listen to these stories and poems, I can't imagine that you won't find yourself in many of them. They are beautifully written and paint unforgettable images of moments we can all recognize. Let yourself enter into these experiences. Let them trigger memories of your own. And imagine Miriam and Yosef sitting with us here, nodding in unison with our own heads as if to say, "Yes, I know. I remember." Listen to this moment that Carrie Melby has with her own son.
I hold Nathan by bent elbow as he burrows into my lap like a rabbit into his den. I feel the roundness of his bottom shifting and shimmying into the space I've created for him with my crossed legs. Nathan leans his back into my wanting torso and melts into me. His head fits just under my chin. I move my chin back and forth over his hair and am caressed by his downy softness. Nathan inserts his thumb into his mouth, and his hand runs over my pant leg like an ant in search of food. He finds his morsel, a wrinkle in my pants. He rubs the wrinkle through his fingers over and over again. This motion creates a rhythmic sensation on my thigh. If he'll let me, I'll fold my arms around him and press this ball of energy, now still, close to me. The smooth skin of his arms rubs against the underside of my arms, where my skin is still soft like his. Snuggled against me so close, I bend my neck and kiss his cheek. My lips touch the plumpness of his toddler face and linger there, savoring the pleasures of motherhood.
Touch. The simplicity of just holding each other, skin to skin, face to face. There is nothing in human experience that connects us to each other more securely than a simple touch. It's part of the way we know each other and the God who infuses all life. Long before Matthew wrote it into his gospel, Yeshua's earliest followers had called him and understood him as Emmanuel, a Hebrew word that Isaiah used and which literally means God with us. To everyone who really knew him, Yeshua was God with us. To Miriam and Yosef, in a way they may never have fully understood, this pregnancy, this birth, this crying infant, this toddler, this youth, this boy that they raised to manhood, was Emmanuel, God with us. But he was still their infant, their little boy that they held and caressed. And he was a little boy in every sense of that word. How do you experience God with us as you change whatever passed for diapers in first century Israel? Or when you nurse him, or when you nurse him back to health from a fever, or worry over his whereabouts and safety as the sun begins to set? When we remove human contact from our understanding of Yeshua's birth and life of his family, we remove our own ability to experience Emmanuel, God with us, in the eyes and faces and lives of those closest to us, the ones hanging their toothbrushes next to ours. We miss the main point that God came and dwelt among us, that Yeshua lives and dwells among us still in every pair of eyes that we encounter. Yeshua began life as all children do. Luke tells us that he grew in wisdom and stature, which means he had to learn as we learn. Did he make mistakes too? What must it have been like to parent Yeshua? Any baby changes our lives beyond recognition, more than any other single event in life. But this child? How did Yeshua change his parents' lives? How has he changed ours? Jenna Logan tries to explain this kind of change in a haiku that she wrote for her daughter Isley.
Beautiful chaos. An unexpected gift that I love beyond life. You've changed my life in such a wild and wonderful way, my little girl. Thank you. Love, Mommy.
Don't you love that? Beautiful chaos. Unexpected gift. Wild and wonderful. These are words and images that only intimate experience could express. A child is chaos personified, bringing unexpected gifts into our lives at every turn, and usually at the worst possible moment. The trick this mother has learned, at least on a good day, is to hold what we normally see as opposites together in one embrace. beautiful chaos, unexpected gift. To hold beauty and chaos together in a single grasp is to see the beauty in chaos and chaos in the beauty of life. Children are God's metaphor for life. Think about it. They embody and embrace all of life's seeming opposites and contradictions, as we do as well when we embrace them. Yes, you have brought beautiful chaos to Miriam's life, but even beautiful chaos is still chaotic, disorienting, and frightening. Hebrew girls were traditionally betrothed at 12 and a half. Can you imagine that? Your 12 and a half year old being engaged to be married? And so Miriam was just a child herself, possibly as young as 13 or 14, when she suddenly was faced with a pregnancy outside of marriage, an offense for which she could have been stoned. Imagine the terror of telling her family, of telling her fiancé. The agonizing wait for Yosef's decision upon hearing that his fiancé was pregnant. Would he break the engagement, prosecute legally, send her away secretly? Imagine Yosef's pain and anger. Imagine the financial pressures and uncertainty about the future, about God's will, and about this child himself. But Yosef takes Miriam and her unborn child into himself and covers her and protects her with his love. And with that decision made, the whirlwind of their marriage begins. We don't know how many years they had together. Yosef may have been much older than Miriam. And somewhere between the lines of Scripture, Mary's beloved husband and protector dies. It's impossible to know when or how old Yeshua was at the time when Miriam suddenly found herself to be a single mother. We only know that Yosef is gone when Yeshua begins his teaching. And we may never know what strength Miriam drew from her son, from family and friends, from the kindness of strangers God may have put in her difficult path. But we do have clues. Kate Fallon Hannon writes about her own loss.
When I was on the edge of womanhood, I dreamed of falling in love, of being a writer, of traveling, teaching, and graduate school. Life spilled open before me and opportunities seemed endless. Good fortune piled itself like packages on my doorstep. But as I hear my 7-year-old's footsteps padding into my room and the easy creak of the bed as he slides between the cold sheets into the spot his father used to occupy, it seems my luck has run out. "Lava," he whispers. Last week it was meteors, and the week before that, hurricanes. Since his father died, there is no end to the horrific nightmares he conjures up in his sleep. My son pushes his cold feet against my warm knees, a small consolation for his disrupted rest. Being a single parent of two is as hard as I ever imagined it would be. I think of the list of people I could phone, girlfriends I could rely on moments like this. I know it's too late to call, but I also know that she would answer if I did. And that golden truth reminds me that after a night of holding back lava or dodging meteors, blessings still exist. How would I ever manage without my friends? How would any of us ever make it out of the rubble? Alex, Krista, Deb, and I met in the fall of 1997 at a community moms group. With toddlers on our hips and babies on the way, we bonded over diaper rashes, breastfeeding, and stories of our lives before stretch marks. It wasn't long before our husbands met and we were having barbecues, dining out, and vacationing together. In June of 2005, my husband died suddenly at the age of 35. In the weeks and months that followed, Alex, Deb, and Krista were like scaffolding, layers and layers of support that held me together when surely my life and my heart were broken. When my house was dirty, they cleaned. When I was lonely, they stayed up late and sent me emails or talked on the phone. When I lost too much weight, they fed me, and when that didn't work, they took me shopping for smaller designer jeans. They babysat, finished projects, told my kids stories of their father. And like trick mirrors, they made it seem as if I was fearlessly doing it all on my own. Only I know better. I know who sent me flowers months after the funeral. I know who cleaned out my refrigerator. I know who canceled plans in order to spend time with me. I know these things. When the great love of one's life dies, the pain is excruciating. My heart is shattered, but every day God sends me an angel with a little piece of tape to patch myself up. It has been months now, and the tape is still coming, bits and pieces to glue the raw wounds together, and through this I am reminded that opportunities are still open before me. The gifts in my life are not wrapped the way I thought they would be, but my friends are the packages scattered on my doorsteps. They are God's pure grace with an endless supply of tape to bind me together while I heal.
Beautiful chaos. Unexpected gifts. Yeshua thrust Miriam and Yosef on a journey that took them a lifetime away from Nazareth and all they knew and loved. How much did Miriam know of the beautiful chaos that awaited her acceptance of this child? We think that since the angel spoke to her, that she must have been fully informed. But when spirit speaks to spirit, sometimes the message isn't as much intellectual as heartfelt. And whatever Miriam may have understood about her role in Emmanuel, could it really have prepared her for all the wild and wonderful things that followed? What did Miriam really know? So what did Mary know, and when did she know it? Did things turn out as she expected? Did she expect anything specific at all? Is it possible she felt regret? Did she feel anger or resentment? Toward what? Whom? Did she ever feel she was an abject failure? That God certainly could have picked a better person to carry his son, raise him, teach and nurture him? We often feel that way. Is it so hard to believe that this young girl may have as well? Rebecca Peacock writes of regret and forgiveness.
I couldn't believe it when the alarm went off this morning. After leaving my job a month ago, I had been living the life of a stay-at-home mom with my 8-month-old daughter and loving it. She and I had our routine down, and I loved our mornings snuggled up in bed, her soft little head and hand in mine, as she nursed happily. However, like all good things, this was determined or destined to come to an end. The money had run out. To be clear, it had never been there to begin with. I was headed back to work. This time, instead of an office across the street where I could be home promptly at 5:15, I was going to be in Washington, D.C. The train ride would put me home at 7, only an hour before my daughter was supposed to go to bed. Still, it was what had to be done. So like a trooper, I left my wailing daughter in the arms of my exhausted husband, just home from the night shift he worked since we cannot afford daycare, and boarded the train. 13 hours later, I returned home in time to nurse my daughter and put her to sleep. After she was safely nestled in bed, I sat on the sofa and sobbed, positive that she would never forgive me for my misdirected energy, betrayal of our special time together. The next morning, I went to her crib, expecting her to be grumpy. Instead, I was treated to a beatific smile, a look that said to me, "I love you, Mommy, and I know you're only doing what you're supposed to do."
This is the Emmanuel moment. When we come face to face with God's presence, when chaos resolves to the singular beauty of a toothless grin, that is offered for no other reason than the pure joy of togetherness. How many times did Yeshua's toothless grin pull Miriam and Yosef out of their aching heads and carry them back to Emmanuel, God with us, back into the pure experience and abandon of their love? Jillian Heffer writes of just such a moment.
"I love you enough to do anything for you. give my life, my love, my heart, my soul to you and for you. Enough to willingly give all my effort, trust, and prayers to you. Enough to want to protect and comfort you. Enough to want the best for you, to wish for your success. Enough to keep my promises, to cherish you, respect you, even to fight you, compromise for you, sacrifice for you. Enough to miss you incredibly when we're apart, no matter what length of time or distance. Enough to believe in our family, to never give up on us. Enough to never want to leave you or live without you. I love you this much.
If we who are imperfect know how to give love and good things to our children, how much more will our Father in heaven love and give good things to us? Our children inspire us to heights of selfless love and devotion that we never thought possible, that we never knew existed within us until tiny fingers touch a spot no fully grown hand could ever reach. And that surge of euphoric joy in bringing life into the world, the gratitude for having the privilege of being chosen to nurture and guard that precious life and watch it grow, is exactly the image Emmanuel uses to express, in terms we can just begin to understand, a portion of the power and extent of God's love for each of us, His children. What child has this power? Every child, if we are willing to see Emmanuel in his or her eyes. Yeshua was Emmanuel to Miriam and Yosef, but also to anyone and everyone who took the time to really know him. He is Emmanuel to each one of us today who takes that same time to know him. He is God with us, the light of the world. And that light illuminates each heart that is transformed by connection with him. And then through each of us, lights the way for anyone who crosses our path. From a single source to many points and back again, always describes the flow of the Father's love. The light of the world. This is who Jesus said he was, and this is who he is to us in our lives. Think about the people in your life. Think about your sons and daughters. Think about your mothers and fathers. Think about your brothers and sisters and friends and other relatives and the people that you work with. Think about how the connection with them is really so precious. Think about how Emmanuel exists in every pair of eyes that we see if we will just see. If we really will enter into that experience. That the light of the world is here and alive and with us today. As much today as he was 2,000 years ago or 6,000 years ago. The light infuses all creation and it never goes out. We just need to enter in. So let this time be a prayerful time. Think about what you're doing as you do it. Rededicate yourself to just being someone who sees the light in the world. There are a few songs like this one written from Yosef's point of view. I think that's why I love that one so much. But though he is often lost in Yeshua's and Miriam's glow, Yosef is the strong, silent presence and support of his family. Yosef reminds us of the Father's love, silent and unseen, allowing others to take center stage and explore their dreams to the full, all the while fully content to smile in the wings, providing both nest and launch pad for the fulfillment of his family. Yosef is our model of the unseen love of one who stands beside us, guides and protects without intrusion or condition. Robert J. Sankey writes of just such a father's love.
I want to describe how I felt when my wife first told me she was pregnant. When she first began to show a little bulge. When she called me from work one day to tell me she was on the way to the emergency room because she had suddenly started to bleed and was hooked up to monitors for 3 hours. When the doctors finally told us she and the baby would be okay. When I saw the baby on the sonogram for the first time, heard the baby's heartbeat, and saw her move. When my wife said she felt the baby move. When I felt and saw the baby move. When I saw the growth of my baby each month on the sonograms. When we found out the baby would be a girl. When we decided on her name, Caitlin Michelle. When my wife told me it was time and it was 3 weeks early. When I had to watch my wife in pain for 13 hours knowing there was nothing I could do. When the monitors went crazy and the doctor said they had to do a C-section. When I stood there holding my wife's hand as the doctors cut her to take the baby and telling her everything was all right and praying with all my heart and soul that I wasn't lying. When the baby was out and my wife was being stitched, I was looking into her eyes and telling her how much I loved her. I want to describe how I felt when we heard the first cry of our baby, when I held Caitlin for the first time, when I watched Caitlin eat for the first time, when we brought her home. When I was holding her 1 week later and she began to have seizures, when I watched her hooked up to the monitors for a week, crying and screaming, unable to pick her up because of the wires. When we took her home again, knowing she would be okay in time. When she looked at me and I realized that she really recognized me. When she smiled at me the first time and I knew it was a real smile. When she laughed at me the first time just this week. When she reached for me to pick her up today, and I knew it wasn't just another uncontrollable action. I want to describe how I felt, but I can't. There are no words.
Sometimes there are no words to describe what our spirits know. And the irony is that our spirits know what our minds sometimes can't comprehend. Our own spirits, God's spirit, Emmanuel, are all trying to teach our minds these deep things so that we may begin to see life as Emmanuel sees it. God with us sees beautiful chaos even in a premature birth or a sick child. God with us sees points of light and connection even in the most difficult and breathless situations. God with us sees unexpected gifts in the impossible schedules we exhaust ourselves trying to keep in order to raise our children, keep them in school, get to one, two, or sometimes three jobs to keep the lights on, ferry children and the children of our friends to endless events, make bottles, change diapers, clean rooms, prepare meals, wash up after meals, give baths, tuck little bodies under sheets, and then fall into bed knowing that as soon as we close our eyes, in an instant, it will seem to be starting all over again. But there is beauty in the chaos. There is profound significance in the smallest detail. Our lives are made of details. Have you realized that? We live life one detail at a time. To miss the details is to miss our lives. To be constantly looking beyond this moment's detail in search of something significant is to dismiss the whole of our lives. We don't live on mountaintops. We live in the valleys of our details. The best of these beautiful stories that you've been hearing from parents living their lives with their children are about the tiniest things. Moments where they have seen God with us in details that often seem too insignificant or too familiar to fully consider. And yet, just such details, every detail in our lives, holds the fullness of all creation. Emmanuel, it's up to us to see. It always has been. Kate Geiselman writes of just such a moment.
I'm awakened by the tiny squeak and the distinctive crackling sound of a disposable diaper on my squirming baby. I open one eye just to check. It's only a stretch. She's sound asleep, tiny. Rosebud lips moving rhythmically, sucking on a dream nipple. Does she remember the darkness, the swish of warm water, the sound of my heart, being pushed abruptly into a cold, bright, loud place? The first words I said to her were, "I'm sorry." But now, as she lies beside me in the pre-dawn darkness, I have no apologies. I rub her stomach gently, feeling her small chest rise and fall beneath my hand in her yellow sleeper. Our bodies warm the bed, and on her face, the blissful peace that only babies know. I have to get up in a half hour. I have to go to work. I have to put gas in the car. I have to get groceries. I have to catch up. She sighs in her sleep, and her baby thumb stumbles to her mouth. Suddenly, I don't have to do anything at all. Her oblivion is contagious. The only thing I have to be is her mother. And much to my surprise, it's the easiest thing I have ever done. Despite the sleepless nights, the fears, and the messy details of caring for a totally dependent human being, loving her is like breathing, automatic, and life-sustaining. "You will never know," I whisper in the dark. And as I look at her perfect dimple hands, I realize that she will never love me the same way that I love her. Every mother loves more than she is loved. I feel no sadness or envy at this realization. It just comes to me as abruptly as truth, like suddenly noticing that the sky is blue, and it has been all along, and I just haven't been paying attention. Pale light seeps in through the bedroom window. I don't want to move. I don't want to get up. I don't want to leave her. I burrow my nose into the pink folds of her neck and inhale deeply. This will have to sustain me for the day. So I savor her scent, linger as long as I can. Later, while I'm miles away, I will be able to summon it up during a rare, quiet moment and pretend that she is with me. Fueled by baby smells, I go to the window and open the blinds. The stars are fading, and the sky today is crisp, clear blue.
Fueled by baby smell, we can move out into the unknown and chaos of our lives and never lose sight of the beauty that is always equally present. Fueled by baby smell, we can carry our atmosphere of Emmanuel around with us as a diver carries around his oxygen. Fueled by baby smell, we can live our lives never far from the remembrance of our own childhood that keeps us close to kingdom. Miriam and Yosef were parents. We are parents. Miriam and Yosef found Emmanuel in the unlikeliest of circumstances. We can do that too, if we so desire. There is a bond, a sameness between us and this holy family that we share as humans living with little humans. Our stories are their story, and their story is ours. To miss that, to miss entering into Emmanuel here and now, is to entirely miss the point of this greatest story ever told, which is our story, the story we find ourselves in every day, every moment, and every detail of our beautiful chaos. And now, speaking of chaos, we'd like to bring up our adult choir and start bringing our children in. Our children.